From the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network studios in Des Moines, this is Iowa Ag Matters. I'm Riley Smith. In today's show, Andy and Mark recap this weekend's storm activity. I wrap up my conversation with Iowa State climatologist Dr. Justin Glisson on El Nino and La Nina. And Andy brings us some more conversation on conservation from the latest episode of Pods of Potential. Now here are your hosts for today, Mark Magnuson and Andy Peterson.
Let's start a brand new week under beautiful sunny skies and temperatures in the mid-50s. Calm may be the key word here after quite a weekend. And certainly our hearts go out to the folks who are still picking up the pieces here this morning. Mark in for Dustin, who's on his way out to Washington, D.C. Washington Watch with our friends at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. And you in Central Iowa had far more excitement than most of us in Eastern Iowa did over the weekend, Mark.
That's certainly right, Andy. You know, our office is located in Des Moines. We're not too far from the Capitol, so that was right there, you know, in the midst of the potential storm, and we were worried about the office and, you know, what was going to happen. And I live in Waukee on the west side of the metro, and there was also storms, you know, circling around that area. And there was a touchdown of a tornado there, not too terribly far away. So it was, yes, it was a very scary night all the way around on Friday. And like you said, our hearts go out to everyone who suffered any kind of damage from those storms on Friday night.
Certainly the rain showing up late in some instances caused some heartburn, if you will, planning of running the tillage tool. And then not much happened on Friday night for some, and the 24 hours to breathe between tillage pass and planting was causing a timing issue for those that wanted to get back in the fields. We did some planting on Saturday. It was borderline fit and then had a couple of issues with the tractor. So all in all, maybe that was a sign that we probably shouldn't have been out there in general, but look to get back to it here later on this week. Lots to talk about, including the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy and tile monitoring coming up right now. We dive into the markets, and Mark sitting down with Greg McBride from Allendale.
Joined today by Greg McBride of Allendale for our opening market discussion. Greg, we got some nice rainfall here in the state of Iowa over the weekend. What are we seeing taking place in the grains today?
A little bit of back and forth movement in the grains. The wheat started out extremely weak. Saw a gap lower on Chicago and KC. Both have come back. The Chicago down about 4. The KC down is up about 3, followed by the Minneapolis wheat, which kind of has kept the corn at bay a little bit, unchanged in the May contract, down a tick in the July contract, and then the beans going up about 3 or 4 cents. Now, you mentioned all the rain that we did see over the weekend. There is going to be some concerns about some flooding as too much rain fell in portions of the eastern plains and into the heart of the Midwest. So there will be some areas that saw 2 to 5 inches or more of rain in that area. And then there were a couple of localized areas that got 5 to 9 inches. So there will be some concerns about some replant. Obviously, with the 1 to 5 day showing a ton of rain across Iowa, Illinois, and the bulk of the big producing Midwest states, we've got a situation where guys will be sidelined probably for the next 5 to maybe even 7 to 10 days. So that'll be something that kind of gets everybody excited. Maybe there's going to be some concerns about some planting delays, or even, like I said earlier, about some replant concerns.
Last week, Greg, wheat was really the main driving force in the marketplace. Do you see that possibly continuing this week? And was that more of an international influence, or do you think it was the United States wheat growing areas that had the biggest influence on what we saw last week?
It's a little bit of everything. You're sprinkling in some of the U.S. side of things with the conditions were a little bit too dry in the West, in the Great Plains. But now with some of those rains that they've seen, now they've got some flooding issues that could be a concern. Maybe that hits the quality of that wheat a little bit. Plus, as you go into the Eastern Corn Belt, maybe you get a little more quality concerns of that wheat as well. But there are some cold concerns when it comes to the European wheat and that Matif wheat driving higher helped to bolster some of our wheat prices. Plus, there was an attack last week by the Russians onto a Ukrainian a grain storage facility, so that helped prop things up as well. You're at several month highs now for this wheat market, but there are starting to show some signs of maybe a short term top with that action last night. But it is a good thing to see it bounce back and finish the overnight, at least a little bit higher in the KC contract.
Greg said there was already some pretty heavy rainfall in Illinois here this morning, but thank you to Greg for taking the time to join us on the show. It's time now for the three big Iowa Ag Matters with Andy Peterson.
Number three.
Sign-ups underway for tile water monitoring with the Iowa Soybean Association, where Tony Seaman is the lab manager, says it's important to understand how many of your precious resources you're keeping versus how many are leaving the farm via leaching, and how that fits with the nutrient reduction strategy, which he says has been integral in providing a sort of baseline or targets.
Before, you know, it was just kind of this nebulous idea of we need to improve water quality in Iowa, but the nutrient reduction strategy really gave us a roadmap. It really tried to set out where we are, where we need to go, and how to get there.
Conversation part of the latest Pods of Potential podcast that you can find at iowaagnet.com or your favorite podcasting service with our friends at the Iowa Soybean Association. And, of course, you can learn more at iesoybeans.com.
Number two.
An expected release of the climate model coming on Tuesday that will include the GREET standards for sustainable aviation fuel. The industry of ethanol views SAF as a way to build demand for its products going forward as gasoline consumption is expected to decline. Reuters is reporting this morning that the administration will release a preliminary climate mode for its sustainable aviation fuel subsidy program in the coming weeks. That's more restrictive than what the ethanol industry has expected.
Number one.
Heading back to La Nina after a very short El Nino, which of course means wetter and cooler conditions for Iowa growers, according to state climatologist Justin Glisson.
Not unexpected. As you mentioned, we were 3 years of La Nina, 2020 through 2023, and then we shifted to that strong El Nino. So right now the trade winds in the Pacific are starting to pick up. They push that warmer water further west in the basin. That allows cooler water to take its place, and that's where we see the diminishment of this strong El Nino.
He's expecting ENSO neutral conditions into May and June, with that La Nina redeveloping by July. I'm Andy Peterson. Those are your three big Iowa Ag Matters.
The Iowa Soybean Association celebrates National Soy Foods this month in April. Did you know foods containing soy protein provide 9 essential amino acids and reduce the risk for heart disease? Foods made from soybeans, such as edamame, tofu, and soy milk, are packed with fiber, iron, and zinc. Create a healthy lifestyle while supporting Iowa farmers by consuming more soy-based foods. Brought to you by the Iowa Soybean Association, powered by the Soybean Checkoff, celebrating 60 years of moving the industry forward.
Coming up on the show, we'll talk about farmers trying to get work done ahead of those storms last Friday night and then the result of those extreme weather events. Well, ahead of last week's storms on Friday, I know, Andy, you had gotten out in the fields because, just like everyone else, we could see that those storms were in the forecast. We knew that there was probably something ahead of us, but I can't imagine you were the only one. Were all of your neighbors out there as well trying to get some work done ahead of those storms on Friday?
Yeah, various stages. I think it continues to amaze me as discussions take place, the wide variance, it seems, this year. Terms of planning progress. It'll be interesting to see what the numbers that are out this afternoon show as far as the progress goes. Some starting to wrap up on soybeans, others haven't even made it there yet. I talked to a gentleman on Saturday who was having a few issues getting his planter going after some recent upgrades, just getting started on corn, which that, you know, here as we get towards the end of April, that isn't all that uncommon. It's the beans that you start to wonder about wanting to get those in by the 1st of May, if possible, of course, if conditions are fit. And speaking of that, interesting agronomy information here from friends at Pioneer. Troy Deitmeyer sent this out earlier this morning in regard to getting back into the fields. You want to be timely, but you have to do right by the soil. And that, I think, is the toughest part, is separating the emotion of wanting to go from an objective look at if it's fit or not.
And that's what we hear about all the time with soybeans, Andy, like you mentioned, is yes, you want to get those soybeans in the ground very early, you know, leaning towards as early as possible, but the conditions need to be right. So don't push it.
They do. Although you have more leniency on beans than there is on corn. So Troy sends this out, right? As we look at getting back into the fields later this week, remember patience is key. A day or even a half a day early can too early can be costly. He did a survey, of course, that showed that as conditions improved, more growers planted and the yields improved. In fact, 24 bushels an acre on corn in a two-day window. So a lot of that depends, of course, on what follows planting. In other words, if it turns off hot and dry, okay, then you've got a bigger problem. If it stays wet, which it looks like it's going to, then it's less of an issue. Unique management conditions and decisions to be made each and every year, Mark. I'm not sure there's any sort of standard operating procedure in agriculture, which can be, I suppose, a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, we're just talking about the moisture side of it, you know, having your field conditions right and everything. And then here comes a storm like this that just, you know, throws all kinds of other problems at you. So, I mean, you're right. There's never a dull moment in farming. That's, I think, the bottom line.
Yeah, so the temperature issue looks like it's gone. I think we're good there. I don't see any cold temperatures in the forecast. The rain was warm over the weekend. So remove that from the equation, which is always good. And then this, those April 13th, 14th, 15th planted dates this year, later on this week might be up. Because the soil temperature, according to Troy's chart here, 50 degrees, it takes corn 20 days to emerge and beans 21, 60, it's 10 and 12, been between those two numbers and the math kind of works. So the emergence studies, of course, that we need to look at in regard to planter performance and even emergence, that time's coming up as well. More Iowa Ag Matters in just a moment. Sit tight.
April is chock full of monthly observances that center around food. So whether it's National Brunch Month, National Garlic Month, National Pecan Month, Filipino Food Month, National Grilled Cheese Month, National Garden Month, National Soft Pretzel Month, or my personal favorite, National Bacon, Lettuce, and Tomato Sandwich Month, Iowa farmers can be proud that they help produce the foods that people eat all over the world. If not for farmers around the country, and especially here at home, none of these celebrations would be as easy to observe. American farmers truly are helping feed the world. So if you're going to take part in observing any of these food-related celebrations, make sure you take the time to thank the American farmers who produce food of all kinds to meet every dietary preference and make these celebrations of and around food so much more memorable for you and your loved ones. And also, if you're going to celebrate around all these food products, make sure you invite your friends at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. We'll bring an appetite as we help support American farmers, especially here in Iowa.
As I mentioned, Dustin is traveling today on his way out to Washington, D.C. to meet with our leadership in our nation's capital, which means Riley takes a look around the state at your cash prices. That's next on your authentic, official, and trusted voice of Iowa agriculture.
You're listening to Iowa Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. I'm Riley Smith. Time now to take a look at the latest cash basis prices across the state. First on corn, ADM in Burlington, July corn 7 under at $4.42. May soybeans a penny under at $11.63. Cargill in Eddyville trading on the May contract, corn 10 over at $4.49. New Cooperative in Algona trading July, corn 3 under at $4.46. Beans 60 under at $11.22. Ag State in Sheldon on the May contract, corn 5 over at $4.44, beans 65 under at $10.99. Ag State in Alta on the May contract, corn 2 under at $4.37, beans 55 under at $11.09. Cargill in Cedar Rapids trading on May as well, corn 24 over at $4.63, beans 10 over at $11.74. Nexus Co-op in Marble Rock on the May contract, corn 15 over at $4.54, beans 45 under at $11.19. Lincoln Way Ethanol in Nevada on the July contract, corn 8 over at $4.57. ADM in Des Moines on the July contract as well, beans 5 under at $11.77. New Cooperative in Red Oak trading on July, corn 5 under at $4.44, beans 60 under at $11.22. Mid-Iowa Co-op and Green Mountain on the July contract, corn 10 under at $4.39, beans 50 under at $11.32. New Cooperative in Sheraton on the July contract, corn 20 under at $4.29, beans 60 under at $11.22. Walk-On Feed Ranch trading the May contract, corn 6 under at $4.33, beans 42 under at $11.22. New cooperative in Glidden on the July contract, corn 3 under at 446, beans 55 under at 1127. Innovative Ag Services in Farley on the July contract, corn 16 under at 433, beans 55 under at 1127. Cash corn and soybean prices are subject to change without notice, so call your local elevator for the latest prices. We'll be back to wrap up this segment in a bit. Sit tight.
April is chock full of monthly observances that center around food. So whether it's National Brunch Month, National Garlic Month, National Pecan Month, Filipino Food Month, National Grilled Cheese Month, National Garden Month, National Soft Pretzel Month, or my personal favorite, National Bacon, Lettuce, and Tomato Sandwich Month, Iowa farmers can be proud that they help produce the foods that people eat all over the world. If not for farmers around the country, and especially here at home, none of these celebrations would be as easy to observe. American farmers truly are helping feed the world. So if you're going to take part in observing any of these food-related celebrations, make sure you take the time to thank the American farmers who produce food of all kinds to meet every dietary preference and make these celebrations of and around food so much more memorable for you and your loved ones. And also, if you're going to celebrate around all these food products, make sure you invite your friends at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. We'll bring an appetite as we help support American farmers, especially here in Iowa.
And again, those cash prices are subject to change without notice, so make sure you call your local elevator just to make sure that what you're seeing is what you're hearing as well. We'll go ahead and get ready for the rest of the show here on Iowa Ag Matters. Still coming up here today, we've got conversation from Pods of Potential, Andy bringing us more conversation on conservation, talking tile line management, getting some data from there and bringing it back onto your farm. I will also wrap up my conversation with Iowa State climatologist Dr. Justin Glisson. Obviously, we've had a lot of weather to discuss lately, but we're talking on the shift from El Nino to La Nina, what that means for Iowa's weather might not be as impactful as you might have thought originally. Sit tight, we'll be back here on Iowa Ag Matters.
Well, we pick up the conversation here on the show from the latest episode of Pods of Potential. Iowa Soybean Association Water Lab Director Tony Seaman, as Andy learns about some of that tile monitoring and things that you can learn and also apply to your setup on your operation. That's here on Iowa Ag Matters.
The Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy sort of drives what you're doing with this water lab.
Yeah, before, you know, it was just kind of this nebulous idea of we need to improve water quality in Iowa, but the nutrient reduction strategy really gave us a roadmap. It really tried to set out where we are, where we need to go, and how to get there. And so part of my job is helping to assess as we're moving towards it, how well we're doing, but also, you know, at more of a granular level, an individual level, you know, we can look at those places to best target, you know, which practice should we put in which place. Where should we look for those to make those larger investments? Where is there maybe some alternate management that a producer can do that can have an impact on water quality? And so really kind of the whole picture from where you're at now to how you're going to get there to hopefully to show when you're there.
Break that down, I guess, for us. If we participate and everything's collected, then how does that kind of show up or what does that look like?
Well, so we give individual updates that are just kind of the numbers during the season and kind of give you an idea of the seasonal pattern and what we're seeing out there. We give you a comparison of all the samples we've taken to date and where yours fall in that range. And then at the end of the year, we kind of aggregate all the data from all around the state and then kind of mine it and slice it and dice it a bunch of different ways so people can see. Participants can see where they, you know, where they fall within the state, within their county, within their landform areas, within their practices. And so, you know, it's not a hard one-to-one comparison of a specific practice, but we like to try and draw out what we can as far as do these practices perform over time? How do things like the weather an individual year or the crop rotation impact them? And then, you know, again, just more information so the producer can go back when they're making their decision making for the next year and think about what they saw, maybe what it looked like the other people were doing in their area, and maybe think about making changes or targeting a practice or cost share.
Yeah, so what did you see in 2023? Speaking of the weather here where we sit in Benton County, Mother Nature was not all that kind or generous in regard to rainfall.
It was like most years, it was varied around the state. And as Wayne can attest, this year was a little thin on on good data. But again, we still see a lot of the same trends that we do. You know, cover crop fields year over year perform better on average than conventional fields in terms of water quality. And in particular, when we kind of drill down, we see this long, slow decline with cover crops, whereas, you know, fields in conventional kind of practices kind of stay in the same vein. And then as you get these dry periods and come out of them, you'll see them spike up higher than they were, whereas the cover crop kind of continued on that decline. And so really showing how they trap those nutrients in place, hold them in the root zone, even when the water comes and flushes out other fields to down to the water table and out into the streams and rivers. And so we're anxiously watching this year to see if, you know, how well these practices perform when we come out of a drought into a wetter period, if this is the year that happens. Most of our longest tile fields are only about 6-7 years, and so we're kind of still waiting for that breakout year to really see what the data does.
You can find the full episode of Pods of Potential on the podcast page of our website at iowaagnet.com. Let's continue with the three big Iowa Ag Matters with Andy Peterson.
Number three.
Encouraging participation in Soil and Water Conservation Week is Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Nagg. The annual week-long event coincides with the 69th annual National Association of Conservation Districts Stewardship Week, an opportunity to recognize the important conservation work that's happening across Iowa and bring attention to the ongoing work by farmers, landowners, and urban residents to conserve and protect the state's soil and water. Now, Secretary Nagg says that Iowa is continuing to, quote, set records for conservation implementation across the state. However, there is still, quote, much more work to accomplish.
Number two.
Sign-ups underway for tile water monitoring with the Iowa Soybean Association, where Tony Seaman is the lab manager, says it's important to understand how many of your precious resources you're keeping versus how many are leaving the farm via leaching and how that fits with the nutrient reduction strategy, which he says has been integral in providing a sort of baseline or targets.
Before, you know, it was just kind of this nebulous idea of we need to improve water quality in Iowa, but the nutrient reduction strategy really gave us a roadmap. It really tried to set out where we are, where we need to go, and how to get there.
Conversation part of the latest Pods of Potential podcast that you can find at iowaagnet.com or your favorite podcasting service with our friends at the Iowa Soybean Association. And of course, you can learn more at iesoybeans.com.
Number one.
Heading back to La Nina after a very short El Nino, which of course means wetter and cooler conditions for Iowa growers, according to state climatologist Justin Glisson.
Not unexpected. As you mentioned, we were 3 years of La Nina, 2020 through 2023, and then we shifted to that strong El Nino. So right now the trade winds in the Pacific are starting to pick up. They push that warmer water further west in the basin. That allows cooler water to take its place, and that's where we see the diminishment of this strong El Nino.
He's expecting ENSO-neutral conditions into May and June, with that La Nina redeveloping by July. I'm Andy Peterson. Those are your three big Iowa Ag Matters.
The Iowa Soybean Association celebrates National Soy Foods this month in April. Did you know foods containing soy protein provide 9 essential amino acids and reduce the risk for heart disease? Foods made from soybeans such as edamame, tofu, and soy milk are packed with fiber, iron, and zinc. Create a healthy lifestyle while supporting Iowa farmers by consuming more soy-based foods. Brought to you by the Iowa Soybean Association, powered by the Soybean Checkoff, celebrating 60 years of moving the industry forward.
Well, something that we've been anxiously awaiting for, Andy, is the SAF climate model. You know, the GREET model for sustainable aviation fuel was going to dictate what goes into that aviation fuel, what is actually driving it, how much is ethanol involved. And it does sound like, now again, these are all, it's so much rumor and innuendo surrounding this, but it does sound like tomorrow is the day. That sounds like the day we're going to get that model finally released.
Yeah, and this has been delayed and pushed back, and it determines, it's sort of the standard, if you will, or thought to be at least the quote-unquote gold standard as far as defining a carbon credit. And how that looks out in the field. And there's so many different carbon intensity programs now that are all dependent upon scoring of an official model, which is where EPA has kind of been dragging their feet a little bit on this. So, yeah, certainly big news to see what that looks like. Hopefully it's basically the GREET model, which is what everybody's wanting and expecting. And, of course, we'll have complete coverage for you here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. More in just a moment. Sit tight.
This is the Midday Market Update on Iowa Ag Matters. I'm Mark Magnuson. Joined today by Justin McKinney of Comstock for our Midday Market discussion. Justin, how have the grains started out here on Monday?
Well, we started out this morning weaker on the corn, down about 2.5 right now. Soybeans touch stronger, about 4 better. Moving into the wheat, just a complete beat down on that, down anywhere on the Kansas City from 6 to the Chicago, 17.5 to 18.
So, Justin, what's been the turnaround for wheat here to start this week after last week wheat was really driving the marketplace with the movement to the upside?
Absolutely. Wheat was the market mover last week. We did see a pretty good amount of rain over the majority of the, excluding western Kansas, wheat area over the weekend. Seeing some sell-off, just pulling a little bit of weather premium out of the market this morning, it feels like.
And what other stories are you going to be watching this week that could move the marketplace one way or the other?
Well, to start with tonight, we have the planting progress report. You know, trade estimate 25 to 32% on the corn side of the world versus last week at 12. You know, anywhere from 18 to 23 on the bean side of the equation, last week versus 8.
That was Justin McKinney with Comstock. Here's Andy Peterson with more livestock news.
Mark, we start beef-wise as always. Daily estimated slaughter total numbers showing up at 113,000 head. That's the same as a week ago, 7,000 more than a year ago. Boxes are mixed here at midday, with 88 loads of choice cuts selling up 22 cents, 297.14. Select 94 cents weaker, 288.72. On 25 loads of movement, and that spread widening to $8.42. Pork-wise, daily estimated slaughter total numbers coming in at 439,000 head. That is 52,000 less than a week ago, 25,000 less than a year ago. So a very slow day on Friday when it came to a hog slaughter. Cash markets, let's wrap up Friday's trade for comparison purposes. Remember where things started from this morning. Barrels and gelds, producers sold on a carcass basis, negotiated purchase-wise, 2,633 head with the weighted average price $90.38, that's up $1.67. Formula purchases, about an average run of 143,000 head. Weighted average price, $88.81. So that market was down $1.30. As far as what's happening here today at midday, negotiated purchases, about 2,000 head of sales, and the weighted average price not available due to confidentiality issues. Formula purchases, a light run of 111,000 head, weighted average price $88.94. That market is 12 cents stronger.
April is full of monthly observances that center around food. So whether it's National Brunch Month, National Grilled Cheese Month, or my personal favorite, National Bacon, Lettuce, and Tomato Sandwich Month, farmers can be proud of the work they do to produce the foods that people eat all over the world. So if you take part in observing any of these food-related celebrations, make sure you thank the American farmers who produce the food of all kinds to meet every dietary preference and make these celebrations of and around food so much more memorable. This message from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
At midday, May corn down 2.5 at 437.5. May soybeans up 4 even at 1163.5. Chicago wheat down 18.5 at 584.75. Minneapolis wheat up 3.25 at $7.50. And Kansas City hard red wheat down a penny at 645.25. May oats up 31.25 at 405 even. On the Merck, June live cattle down 95 cents at 177.62. May feeder cattle down 57 cents at 248.12. May lean hogs down 20 cents at 94.07. That was a check of the Midday Markets on Iowa Ag Matters. I'm Mark Magnuson.
Well, we continue the market conversation here on Iowa Ag Matters. Andy, Mark, and Riley, today as Dustin is on his way to Washington, D.C., and we continue the conversation. Mark does, focusing on livestock with Greg McBride from Allendale.
Let's go over to the other side of the ag marketplace. What's happening with the protein sector?
Well, as you probably have seen, we've kind of been choppy here recently as the cattle market has suffered from Maybe a little bit of mixed information in that cattle on feed report 2 weeks ago, but we're also hearing about bird flu once again. This is another concern. This has been something that's been in and around the market since about January, but we've only just been hearing about it. Now they're starting to hear that there's testing for milk that has found traces of bird flu in it. So there is a little bit of concern. We may start out a little bit on the defensive this morning as we get going here, but this will be something to watch, because it doesn't sound like the bird flu situation is over. Short-term supply for cattle is too high, so that does hold us back a little bit, but we know that production number going out to the end of the year and maybe into early next year is still friendly for us. We just have to see if we can slog through some of these numbers fairly quickly as we start getting into the grilling.
And Greg, an area we really don't talk a lot about is the milk prices and the dairy side of things. But of course, as it relates to the avian influenza story, that has been right there in the headlines. And we have seen some wild swings in the dairy price there. So what have you made of that?
Well, that'll be continue to be a situation, you know, as more bird flu situations come up, it could drive us away from milk. It could be that we have to throw milk out. There could be some situations where, you know, it does bring up a scarcity of milk and drive prices higher. So as you talk about seeing wild swings, you could continue to see those wild swings in that milk market. It's all reactive to whatever the latest headline is. So that'll be something to watch. There's not any one direction that you can just say, hey, this is it. You have to be bearish on cattle, or you have to be bearish on milk, or you have to be bullish on either one of them at this point, because the markets have enough sway in them that you do see these big whipsaw type movements throughout the day and week.
April is chock full of monthly observances that center around food. So whether it's National Brunch Month, National Garlic Month, National Pecan Month, Filipino Food Month, National Grilled Cheese Month, National Garden Month, National Soft Pretzel Month, or my personal favorite, National Bacon, Lettuce, and Tomato Sandwich Month, Iowa farmers can be proud that they help produce the foods that people eat all over the world. If not for farmers around the country, and especially here at home, none of these celebrations would be as easy to observe. American farmers truly are helping feed the world. So if you're going to take part in observing any of these food-related celebrations, make sure you take the time to thank the American farmers who produce food of all kinds to meet every dietary preference and make these celebrations of and around food so much more memorable for you and your loved ones. And also, if you're going to celebrate around all these food products, make sure you invite your friends at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. We'll bring an appetite as we help support American farmers, especially here in Iowa.
Thank you once again to Greg McBride of Allendale for joining us on the show today for market commentary. And coming up next on the show, we will continue the weather discussion as Riley wraps up his conversation with state climatologist Dr. Justin Glisson, El Nino transitioning to La Nina. Iowa Ag Matters next. Well, we had some discussion recently on the program about El Nino, that weather pattern that closed out the year 2023 so strong, transitioning into La Nina at some point this year. And now we get into the nuts and bolts of that discussion even further as Riley is joined by state climatologist Justin Glisson here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
And then something that was interesting, you know, we had mentioned earlier about that warmer winter and really not getting that freeze. We went into that El Nino weather pattern. Now we're getting back towards La Nina and seeing that transition again. I know we were in a period of a long time of having La Nina, and then getting to that El Nino was finally some change. I mean, how is it working out that we went, you know, to El Nino and then we're going right back into that? Is that something that we would expect to see, or was that a little bit unexpected?
Not unexpected. As you mentioned, we were 3 years of La Nina, 2020 through 2023, and then we shifted to that strong El Nino. So right now the trade winds in the Pacific are starting to pick up. They push that warmer water further west in the basin. That allows cooler water to take its place, and that's where we see the diminishment of this strong El Nino. It's looking like we'll be in ENSO neutral conditions in the April, May, June timeframe, somewhere in there, meaning between El Nino and La Nina, and then a pretty good probability of a weak to moderate La Nina in the summertime. Now, when we look at warm season La Nina versus El Nino, or even the phase of ENSO, the El Nino Southern Oscillation, a low correlation to weather driven by La Nina as the summer is projected to have, because we're more thunderstorm driven. That's where we get a majority of our precipitation. Where we see the phase of El Nino or La Nina really impacting the weather pattern is during the cold season, when we have larger scale low pressure systems that are driven by the larger scale climate drivers in the Pacific. But when we look at the trends from a shift, pretty rapid shift from El Nino to La Nina, we do see a warm signal in summertime in some of the model runs, but also in analog years where we've seen a shift like this. Precipitation wise, we're pretty much all over the board. We've seen wet summers, we've seen drier summers, but that warmer signal is something that we have seen. And when we transition from El Nino to La Nina, we typically see a more rapid shift from El Nino to La Nina versus going from La Nina to El Nino. It's just something in the large scale climate system that drives that transition.
Does that more rapid shift lead to any more, you know, slightly elevated weather issues? Or, I mean, I know you mentioned as well that it's not necessarily as much of a weather driver as some people might think.
Yep, we're still in the shoulder season, so we still see what we call synoptic scale forcing. Synoptic scale would be those large low pressure systems that come through, as we've seen over the last several weeks and what we'll see over the next 7 days. But we are shifting towards more mesoscale or thunderstorm driven rainfalls that we get in the growing season. So we have that the spring predictability barrier, where we're not necessarily sure in the modeling what a La Nina in the summertime necessarily will give us. But as I mentioned, low correlation with La Nina and summertime weather behavior. So we'll just have to see once we get closer into the summer season.
All right, Justin, lots of great information today. For those of our listeners and our viewers who would like to get in touch and learn more from the Climatology Bureau, how can they do that?
Yep, just go to Google Iowa Climatology Bureau. My contact information will be on the Iowa Department of Agriculture's website, the Climatology Bureau. My contact line is 515-281-8981. Emails justin.glisson@iowaagriculture.gov. Always happy to provide information, growing season reports, as you mentioned. We now have the weekly crop progress report. So please feel free to reach out and chat with me.
Great visiting with you as always, Justin, and we look forward to getting weekly updates as we go through this crop season.
Thanks, Riley.
April is chock full of monthly observances that center around food. So whether it's National Brunch Month, National Garlic Month, National Pecan Month, Filipino Food Month, National Grilled Cheese Month, National Garden Month, National Soft Pretzel Month, or my personal favorite, National Bacon, Lettuce, and Tomato Sandwich Month, Iowa farmers can be proud that they help produce the foods that people eat all over the world. If not for farmers around the country, and especially here at home, none of these celebrations would be as easy to observe. American farmers truly are helping feed the world. So if you're going to take part in observing any of these food-related celebrations, make sure you take the time to thank the American farmers who produce food of all kinds to meet every dietary preference and make these celebrations of and around food so much more memorable for you and your loved ones. And also, if you're going to celebrate around all these food products, make sure you invite your friends at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. We'll bring an appetite as we help support American farmers, especially here in Iowa.
Well, thank you to Riley, to Andy as well for helping out here on the show today. If you missed it, Dustin is in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, for Washington Watch, as he is talking with the leaders out in D.C. about everything that pertains to agriculture, and he will be bringing us a lot of coverage from that event. I'm Mark Magnuson. You've been listening to Iowa Ag Matters. We'll talk to you again Tuesday here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.